smell it had lacked a moment earlier. "Mr. Mirabel, we heard you were leaving. This way, please." The first of the two mendicants who waited for me gestured that I should follow him along the corridor. We walked along it with springy steps. At the end was an elevator which carried us the short vertical distance to the true axis of rotation of Idlewild, followed by the considerably longer horizontal distance to the true end point of the discarded hull which formed this half of the structure. We rode the elevator in silence, which was fine by me. I imagined the mendicants had long since exhausted every possible conversation with the revived. That there was no answer I could give them to any question which they would not have heard 100 times previously. But what if they had asked me what my business was? And what if I had answered truthfully? "My business? I'm planning to kill someone, actually." It would have been worth it, I think, just to see their faces. But they probably would have assumed I was just some delusional case who was discharging myself too soon. Soon the elevator was threading its way along the inside of a glass-walled tube that ran along the outside of Idlewild. There was almost no gravity now, so we had to station ourselves by hooking limbs into padded staples sewn onto the elevator's walling. The mendicants did this with ease, quietly amused by my fumbling attempts to anchor myself. The view beyond was worth it, though. More clearly now, I could see the parking swarm Amelia had shown me 2 days earlier, the vast shoal of starships, each tiny barbed sliver of vessel almost as large as Idlewild, yet made to seem tiny by the size of the swarm itself. Now and then the violet light edged the whole swarm for an instant, as one of the ships fired its hull thrusters to adjust its lazy orbit around the other ships. A matter of etiquette, sly positioning, or an urgent collision avoidance maneuver. There was something heartbreakingly beautiful about the lights of distant ships, I thought. It was something that touched both on human achievement and the vastness against which those achievements seemed so frail. It was the same thing whether the lights belonged to a caravel battling the swell on a stormy horizon, or a diamond-hulled starship which had just sliced its way through interstellar space. Between the swarm and Idlewild, I could see one or two brighter smudges, which must have been the exhaust flames of shuttles in transit, or new starships arriving or departing. Closer, Idlewild's hub, the tapering end of the cone, was a tangle of random docking ports, servicing bays, quarantine and medical areas. There were 12 or so ships here, most of them tethered to the hospice, but the majority looked like small servicing vessels, the kinds of craft the mendicants would use if they needed to jet around the outside of their world to conduct repairs. There were only 2 large ships, both of which would have been minnows in comparison to one of the light-huggers in the parking swarm. The first was a sleek, shark-shaped ship which must have been designed for atmospheric travel. The black, light-sucking hull was offset with silver markings, harpies and nereids. I recognized it immediately as the shuttle which had taken me from the top of the Nueva Valparaiso bridge to the Orvieto after we had been rescued. The shuttle was attached to Idlewild by a transparent umbilical, down which I could see a slow, steady stream of sleepers passing. They were still cold, still in reefer sleep caskets, which were being pushed along by some kind of peristaltic compression wave of the umbilical. It looked uncomfortably as if the shuttle were laying eggs. "They're still unloading," I said. "A few more bays of the sleeper hold to clear, and then she's done," said the first mendicant. "I bet it depresses you, seeing all those slush puppies coming through." "Not at all," the second one said.